Our oldest son died. He died of a reaction to a prescribed drug. And that whole horror led me to do the advocacy kind of work that I've been doing for decades. And essentially, like many of those psychiatric drugs, they're put out in a way, the way the COVID injections, the experimental injections are. They are not tested properly. The promise is always, we're going to save money. We're going to save the government a lot of money with this new drug that now costs $8,000 a year. That was the drug then, and that was the first one that had such a huge price tag on it, Clozaril. Because it was going to clear out the hospitals and it was going to do all these magic things. Yeah, right. They never told you about the casualties that the drug caused. The childhood vaccines now, most of them, are cocktails. The beauty for industry of cocktails is you cannot blame adverse effects on this drug or that drug or the other because they're all in there. How do you know which one? It's a wonderful way to cover it all up. The heavy-handedness of government dictating suddenly how you're to live your life, in fact, stopping you from living your life, and the barrage of the narrative, of the single narrative, that didn't ring right. Just by itself, it didn't ring right. And as time went on, it became apparent that there was something going on, that we were being herded, sort of pushed as a herd. It began quite early. For example, New York was portrayed, you know, so many thousands dying and the hospitals being overwhelmed. And yet there were some people who went in with their cameras, with their videos, and showed empty hospitals in New York. There were some hospitals that were indeed overcrowded, but that's because everyone was being sent to just a certain number of hospitals. So that, you know, that's a big lie. And so I realized that panic was being fomented. Panic was being fomented so that people would lose confidence in their ability to discern things. And so the best way is listen to government, what they say, public health officials, the experts. And that's, of course, exactly what they were told day and night by every media outlet. When they came up with the experimental vaccines and immediately began to restrict people who weren't going to line up, who weren't going to show that they were vaccinated, couldn't travel. And when they, you know, shut schools and on and on, it became very, very apparent. That's when I started to see, wait a minute. Because, of course, I was active by then, and I was aware of alternative sources of information. And it didn't pan out. What they were telling us officially didn't pan out with what people on the ground, witnesses, were saying. And that became more and more apparent each day. It became apparent that you cannot trust what officials are telling you. They have a different agenda than you think. Those who are responsible for the pandemic have used two of the weapons that the Nazis used, which was fear and propaganda. Propaganda feeds the fear, foments it into, you know, hardens it even more so. And that's what has been happening here. At that time, the fear was against Jews who were accused of being spreaders of infectious disease. The thing that I realized and was horrified by was that medicine, which under the Nazis had been totally taken over by government, And they were the ones that drew up the protocols for the genocide. It began, medical murder actually began with the T4 program, where disabled German infants and young children under the age of 3, they were the first victims. And they were followed by the mentally ill, the physically disabled, and finally the nursing homes. Lo and behold, to my horror, in March and April of 2020, governments all over Western Europe, United States, Canada, Australia, in other words, the wealthiest countries in the universe, issued, governments in those countries issued directives to hospitals not to treat the elderly. It was a genocide. Andrew Cuomo, who was governor of New York at the time, before he issued that murderous order which slaughtered 15,000 elderly New Yorkers, he predicted this virus in nursing homes will be like fire through dry grass. And for his effort, he was given a media award. What this has to do with, actually, is utilitarian philosophy. The utilitarian philosophy, which is eugenics, looks at only the practical, and they put a value on human lives. Some human lives are worthy and some are unworthy. And the elderly are regarded as an economic burden, unworthy. The Nazis called them worthless eaters. Here they've never, in the West, they've never owned up to the genocidal policy against the elderly. No one has been tried. And many, many millions have been spent for genocide. Midazolam was bought in huge quantities, both in the UK and the United States, and it was prescribed in very high doses, doses that are lethal. It was with full intention. There's no getting away from it. This was genocide. This was mass murder to be rid of the economic burden. Andrew Cuomo actually was persuaded to do it by the insurance industry of New York to give immunity to the hospitals and to nursing homes. And they got rid of the economic burden. People who paid insurance all their lives, and then the insurance company was able to just walk away. Didn't have to pay.
When we watched the Nuremberg trial and we saw the Nazi high command being convicted, which was wonderful. But you know who really should have sat in that box? Henry Ford, Rockefeller. Henry Ford in 1938 got the Medal of Honor equivalent from Hitler himself. Rockefeller owned the company that made Zyklon B gas to gas the Jews. GM made 75% of the trucks for the Nazi war machine. IBM provided the primitive computer punch card system in order to manage the concentration camps. They got off with not even a mention. So my biggest concern is, yeah, Fauci has to go, I get it. And there's a lot of low-hanging fruit, a lot of people in the politicians and who are, you know, accessories to genocide. But
the top,
unless we cut off the head of the top, they're just gonna do it again.
There's another thing. Hitler couldn't have done what he did by himself. And we have now common threads, familial and certainly corporate. The big corporations and the banks industries that gave Hitler his capabilities, they are now continuing. IBM is a perfect example. Without IBM, there would not have been 6 million. There may have been 2 million. But the efficiency of IBM technology enabled industrialized level genocide. And they are now at it fully again. It was the IBM passport that Governor Cuomo, New York State, contracted. What people need to understand is that the digital identity that they now are pushing, that is the ticket to slavery. Once they have that identity, and they intend to embed it in our bodies, they have then full control of our lives. Remotely, you won't even know who it is. Doesn't have to be your enemy, whom you know. No. Remotely, click, click, they can stop everything. They can stop your bank account. They can stop your credit account. They can take your mortgage away. They can do anything they want if they have your identity. So for people to go blindly into that is worse than suicide. Trudeau gave a hint. He showed that you can stop your bank accounts, mortgage. I mean, he even separated children from the truckers. This is so insidious. This is so horrific that if people don't understand that this can happen to them, if they don't accept the fifth shot or the sixth shot, that's exactly what the kind of power and authority that one would be giving up if one continues along the road of obeying. Obedience is the road to slavery.
Since a year and a half ago, I became an activist in all the pandemic situation. I was really burning from the inside, and I cannot sit still and see things happening. And for the sake of my kids and all the other kids, I really should do something about it. Especially living in the Netherlands, which was part of the Second World War. Walking in here in the streets, in demonstrations, and seeing the brutality of the police and the tyranny, it really made me think about the past, my grandparents, all the stories I've heard at home. For me it was really important to be part of the resistance of what's happening. I started to participate in demonstrations here, and to see what else can I do with the activism.
My name is Joshua Stileman. I'm based in Brooklyn, New York. I am a grandchild of Holocaust survivors. My grandmother was Gloria Stileman. My grandfather was Harold Stileman. They both survived concentration camps, and as did all of the remaining relatives from my family. They were from Poland. Benzin, Sosnowitzer, and Lodz. And my grandmother was the sole survivor of her whole town, in fact. Mm-hmm. All of her siblings, parents, all of her neighbors perished. And she wound up connecting with a cousin from a couple of towns over. And they married two brothers, my grandfather and my uncle. And my grandfather had three brothers who all made it through the camps together. He lost two sisters, and their other sister, my aunt Brunka, hid in an attic for a few years. And she was about this big and a ball of fire. I got to know most of them, and I also got to know the entire extended family, because everyone in their lives were all survivors. They like they were all friends that came over on the boat together, and which was in 1949. First, they went to the Lower East Side and lived in a tenement. They eventually settled in Brooklyn. But everyone they knew socially, which is to say everyone I knew socially as a kid, was, you know, considered kind of part of the mishpacha, you know, part of the extended family. I own a business called Freeze Brewing, which is based here in Brooklyn. I have a dear friend who, as part of my own kind of COVID awakening, he's someone who I talked to extensively about what was going on. And we got into a heated debate, and he started telling me about things like, you know, escape immunity and variants that were going to come and things like vaccine mandates. And admittedly, I waved my finger in his face and said, what are you talking about? This is the United States of America. How could they're not going to ask us to show papers. And I don't think I've ever been so preposterously wrong in my entire life. Because unfortunately, my friend was right. And he in fact said, wait until August. And then like clockwork, August 1st rolls around and the Delta variant came. And as did the announcement about the vaccine mandates in New York. And I was very upset by it. I was upset. I was talking to anyone who was in my personal orbit, in my professional orbit. And much to my dismay, the people around me didn't really see a problem with it. And that was just so surprising to me. Really smart, good people who I've known for years, good friends of 20 years, who, you know, and I would make comments like, because at that time we knew already that there were breakthrough infections, right? So we knew that the vaccine did not stop transmission. And I started talking about, you know, how again, I'm not opposed to the vaccine. I don't know a lot about it. For the record, I got the J&J shot last spring. I sort of rationalized it with, you know, I put enough crap into my body my whole life. How bad could it be? Sort of thing. And then I remember when my friend was saying, well, are you going to get your children vaccinated? My reaction was, why would I? Kids are at no risk from this disease. And it's experimental. And he said, what's going to happen when they make you? And again, I said, well, what are you talking about? How could they make me get my children vaccinated for this? So my as the months went on, my own frustration certainly ratcheted up. My confusion ratcheted up. I think in part because I felt like everyone around me is sort of in a daze and not really paying attention to what's going on.
My name is Revital Floman. I live in Israel, in Jerusalem. Except my grandmother and father, nobody survived. My grandma was a partisan. My father, he was 10 years old when it all began in Belgium. He was taken to a church. He was with blonde hair and blue eyes. So they hide him in a church for a while. He was part of the choir. There was a priest there that knew my grandma, and this was the connection. So he agreed to to hide him for a little time until he felt that it was too dangerous for him. Then my father moved all over Belgium, in the forest, in farms. He just met with nice people. They took him from one place to another place. Usually he didn't know anybody. He wasn't in contact with his mother until the end of the war. And his father was taken in the very first Aktia in the street to Auschwitz. So we never saw him again. His sister was taken to Auschwitz also. It was really a big trauma for him, of course. But he didn't talk about it. My grandma didn't tell us anything.
my great-grandfather, Alexander Timofeyevich. He was a soldier with the Soviet army fighting the war. And eventually in Germany, he was captured along with 1,000 other Russian soldiers. And so they were sent to a concentration camp. And then afterwards, he was moved to another one. In one of the concentration camps, there was a guard who had beaten up one of the prisoners and then took a leak on him. My great-grandfather, he saw this, and so he went straight to the control tower, or the place where the people who were running the camp were sitting, and he told them what had happened. They threw him out of the window from the third story, and he broke some bones. They assumed that he probably died from the fall, but he survived. When he was kind of crawling away, he found a plastic bag, and he said that this plastic bag was probably the reason why he survived the war, because a lot of the people in the camp who died, they died from cold lungs. They got sick from the cold. At night, when it was really cold, he was using this plastic bag to breathe into it to keep his lungs warm. And so they had to work in these concentration camps with manual labor. He was in the second concentration camp. There was a wealthy Austrian woman whose husband was an officer of the Austrian army who was fighting against the Soviets. She wanted some personnel at home, and so she went to this camp and bought some slaves to work for her, and my great-grandfather was one of them. When they got to her place, they were very hungry and they were very cold and they had trouble breathing. And my great-grandfather, he said to the other two, "Don't eat too much too fast," because they were served some food. And one of the others, he just ate, because he'd been hungry for so long. He just ate, and he actually died from that. So my great-grandfather, he was working for her, and believe it or not, she happened to fall in love with him. He was a handsome and strong Soviet man, and they actually got a baby together. When this baby was 1 year old, he kept saying that he wanted to get back to his wife and children in Russia. And she kind of helped him to dodge problems. Like when the Austrian soldiers were going to come, she kind of helped hide him. But then when the Soviet soldiers were approaching a specific area and she found out, then she let him know when to leave and where to go to likely find the Russian soldiers. And so he went into the forest. There were Soviet soldiers there and they found him. And then he rejoined the army and he continued to fight the war until the war was over.
Morality, values are not taught in medical school. And to make proper value decisions when it's difficult, when you need to perhaps sacrifice, requires a very strong moral compass, without which you get swept away by the tide of tyranny. So to stand up to the world and say, you are all wrong. There is no medical reason to vaccinate children, but there is other reasons, which is if you want to create a slaves that are bound to a certain system, a control mechanism, then that's a very useful technique. So what's going to happen is like this. They get about Apple Pay or credit cards or paper money, any fiat currency. There's going to be a one world global cryptocurrency, which is going to be controlled by a few global powers. And in order to participate in this system, you will need to be a transmitter of biometric data. So essentially, every home will have a scanner. And let's say I want to order bread. I order bread. I scan my hand. I go. It gets credited or whatever to my account. Probably some drone will deliver the bread. Now, what if I don't want to be tagged with a digital identifier? What if I don't want my location known 24/7 by some government body? Well, then I won't be able to participate in financial transactions legally. I mean, there'll be a black market, but what if the government doesn't like what I say? That's happened. So you see, this is modern day slavery. Slavery has always been the most lucrative industry in human history.
Yep.
And we have a few global psychopaths, sociopaths, that have engineered a brilliant plan, evil but brilliant, to enable the enslavement of humanity, basically.
The vexed and unvexed become the collision. But this is a government-dictated division. This is nothing in real biology or real life or anything. It's essentially to reward the obedient and to punish those who question and don't follow in lockstep. Lockstep is really the objective. They want every person in the world to march in lockstep to whatever order is given. This is where we're going. That's called slavery. We have been lied to from the get-go. Every single aspect of the public health directives and restrictions were based on lies, falsehoods. While they tell us, they admonish us to follow the science. First of all, nobody is following the Ten Commandments. They're more important. That's human. That's human values. Thou shalt not murder. And this is rampant murder. This is the degree to which we've been lied to is really quite staggering. It began with the definition of a pandemic. The World Health Organization called it a pandemic when they had no evidence of a pandemic. A pandemic used to be defined by the number of deaths. Instead, this was by cases. Cases using a totally inappropriate PCR test. So that ensured that there would be a lot of cases because that one is known to have false positives. That's what it's about. Everything was dishonest about it. And the tragedy is that the medical profession once again abandoned Hippocratic medicine, in which they took an oath of first do no harm to the individual. They became just like under the Nazis, agents of the state who gave their seal of approval to infanticide, euthanasia, and genocide. We're talking about what many foremost world-renowned scientists, doctors, are calling these experimental shots a biological weapon for genocide. It came out again recently that the Biden administration provided the media, all of them, every one of them, both the social and the other, as if they even needed more money, but $1 billion for propaganda to only run positive stories about the COVID so-called vaccines. Why would you need to bribe them? Why would you need, there are states that offered bribes for parents to vaccinate their children. What kind of a society is that? What kind of a society? That's barbarism.
We learned history and we believed in what they told us. But today I understand that all these people who are in the government are actually puppets. They're following orders. They're not speaking their minds. But yeah, it's still so difficult to understand how the land of the Jews was supposed to be a safe place for the Jewish people, mainly for those who survived the Holocaust, for the second generation. How can they participate in such an evil plan? This is beyond me. And more than that, how the survivors who are still alive don't see the parallels. They don't see how, that it's 1948 all over again. This is beyond me. And the only answer I have, the people in charge are not speaking their own mind. They're controlled by higher level voices or power.
Well, I believe, first of all, that the government is a reincarnation of Joseph Mengele. And they're finishing the job of what Hitler started. And the proof is that Israel now has one of the highest death rates from COVID, from Omicron. That's what the government is saying. What's interesting is that no one else is dying from Omicron.
Yeah.
Because Omicron it's very contagious, but it doesn't affect the lower airway. It, in most cases, just affects the upper airway. Most people recover. So why are Israelis dying from Omicron? Which they are. Well, perhaps there's another reason. Israel is the most immunized country in the world, especially from the perspective of multiple boosters. For example, Israel is the most, has the most people who got four shots. Now, there are over 30 peer-reviewed papers that show that these vaccines damage the immune system, the innate immune system. They damage something called natural killer T cells. Also, they suppress tumor suppressor genes. We're seeing a huge spike in like weird cancers around the world, actually, and people dying from opportunistic infections that they usually wouldn't die from. And there's a reason, there's a term for that. It's an acquired immune deficiency syndrome, which has an acronym. It's called AIDS. Now, before people go nuts, they go nuts. I don't care. I actually like it. They call it the VAIDS, vaccine acquired immune deficiency syndrome. I prefer to call it AIDS because it sends the message stronger. It's not HIV.
No, it's actually AIDS, right?
HIV is a virus that damages the immune system and causes AIDS. It's true. But there are other things that can damage the immune system, like this poison death shot. So the Israeli government signed a deal with the devil, Albert Bourla, who won the Genesis Prize, which is the equivalent of the Jewish Nobel Prize this year. And he called on CNBC, Israel, the biggest laboratory in the world. And what they've done is given a large percentage of their country AIDS. They've destroyed the immune system of half of the Jewish people in Israel.
Well, it's going exactly by the Goebbels playbook. There are several things in it. First of all, of course, it's the big lie. You keep repeating and repeating and repeating, and then it becomes the only truth that you've ever heard. And that's how people are really kind of, if one can have a dialogue, that's the way that everybody knows. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows. The thing is, though, that if everybody knows, then maybe it's a lie. Because everybody, in a real life, in a real democratic society, everybody doesn't agree. Everybody argues. But here you're not allowed to argue. The minute you argue, you become a conspiracy theorist. I wish that it was only a theory. But I know that in the 30s, before the Holocaust, what led up to the Holocaust was this disbelief that Hitler meant what he said. Klaus Schwab is a perfect example. His father had a factory which it was both in Switzerland and in Germany. Hitler gave him a national award as one of the wonderful companies. They had slave labor. The family business provided Hitler with heavy military use equipment. And Klaus Schwab went in his footsteps. He was involved in South Africa providing nuclear weapons to the apartheid regime. He then went to Harvard, was a protege of Henry Kissinger, and then went on to form the World Economic Forum, which again is really supported by others, by the oligarchs. What they've been doing is slowly putting authority and power into global uniform agencies like the World Health Organization, the United Nations, World Economic Forum, the Bilderberg. There are a whole bunch of them. We small fry haven't been paying much attention to those because this is really the oligarchs, you know, the billionaires, the oligarchs. But they have managed to include heads of state from all stripes. Putin was also a World Economic Forum graduate. This club is who we are really fighting. And behind this club are others who always remain behind the curtain. We don't know all the names, but we know some of the players. What is interesting to know, all these people are unelected by anyone. They are absolutely intent on demolishing democracy in any and every form. What is now called democracies are not democracies anymore because they don't represent the interest of the people that they rule.
My name is Marion Schmidt. I was a guide in KZ Memorial in Dachau. I always asked how could this Nazi regime, how could it happen? How right. could our parents put up with having all their rights taken away from them? Right. Why didn't they say no? I'm searching for an answer, and I'm searching today for an answer. Dachau was the first concentration camp of Germany, built it in March 1933, and was a model to oppress people. You can see photos with a background of torture, of how to have the prisoners work, medical experiments. First came fascism, then came war. These are two brothers inseparably linked. I always said, anyone who wants to provoke a war has to lie. Now we have had the situation with Corona and all the oppression of our democratic rights. In November, young people over 14 years aren't allowed to come into the memorial site if they aren't vaccinated. I cried. I cried because of this. I myself was oppressed. It was not allowed to speak about this. Division between unvaccination and vaccination already a violation. The demonstration, I have done nothing other than demand we want come back to these democratic rights. The reaction came 4 weeks later. I was no longer allowed to work. And I'm in struggle with the leader of the memorial site. We have a study by the Berlin Charity expects around 500,000 serious vaccination complications in Germany. That is 40 times more than previously stated. I think it's necessary to say to people, learn of history. And this is what we have to do for our children, for the future. The problem with the dictatorship is now we have the face of a soft dictatorship. And this is a problem to see what is behind. If the mask is from the face, what is behind? Behind is reactionary fascistic ideology, and it's very dangerous. Albert Einstein said, being blind is not wanting to see. Comparing does not mean equating. In my head was a song from Tracy Chapman. Don't know, talking about a revolution. It sounds like a whisper. And I think that's necessary, talking about revolution.
So from the beginning, I knew something is wrong. A few people in Tel Aviv, we were about 20 to 30 people, and they wanted to speak with each other, and, you know, we felt that we cannot talk with people around us. We grew, we started about 30 people, 20 to 30 people. In the last summer, we were about 4 to 5,000 there. I developed my conscience to open my eyes what is really happening, what is going on with the WHO and Klaus Schwab and all his friends there and the New World Order. In Jerusalem, we are very, very few activists. Every week on a Thursday, we are going out to small demonstrations. We are doing it almost a year. I think my grandma genes are in me. She was an activist. She was a partisan. So, you know, the first times that I was in the street, it was obvious to me that I'm keeping on what she's starting there to speak, not to be frightened and to investigate, not to listen to the main media. But my brothers are not like that. We say here in Israel, the ones who are still sleeping, we call them the sleepers, believe what they hear in the main media. This is my sister. When we demonstrate in Jerusalem between the market and the very religious neighborhoods, we meet there with a lot of Orthodox, and they're all awake. They're all awake. But the rabbis don't let them to be in the streets. They have flyers of their own in their neighborhoods, in the synagogues. They really know everything. I think I'm fighting for my life, for your life, for the life of everybody on this earth. In one way, I understand the sleeping people, sleepers, that was brainwashed all the time, almost 24 hours a day. And they can't believe somebody wants to harm them. This is in one hand. The other hand, I feel something like anger. Because if we were a mess, okay? Really a mess. And we were on the streets. It can be completely something else. But I think now in Israel, the lies are starting to rise. There are a lot of injured from the jabs. I myself know about around 10 people around me. Not all of them, you know, connect what is going on with them with the jabs. But for me, it's obvious. So something is going on in Israel. But with that, the dictatorship is also being faster than it was. Than it was about 4 months ago, 5 months ago. Yeah, aggressive. Of the police, of our rights. There is a rule in Israel, like was in Nazi Germany, you know, the Chok HaSmcha, emergency law, emergency law. In Nazi Germany, in 1934 it was, or 32, all the authority is not in the Congress or something, in just in one hand. They can do everything they want. They don't have to ask for the permission of the Knesset. I think it's not just in Israel. So I think we know right now that all the politicians in Israel are really some are puppets, you know. Somebody's operating them, we are sure. Because last year we changed the parliament and nothing changed. It became worse. The people that were before in the opposition and shouting about all what is going on, when they elected, they did everything the same. We were just living in an illusion that we have a democratic country and we can decide what we want. Now I know for sure it was an illusion. 50, 60 years of illusions.
And you know, there are some of the parallels, actually, because back then, you know, the Jews had problems with running a business. They weren't allowed to, and people were treating them poorly just because of being Jewish. And now I'm hearing stories of, for example, a Russian woman who has a little health shop somewhere here in Denmark, and then customers were coming and just telling her to shut down the business and leave Denmark, go back to Russia. And these kind of things happen when it's wartime and when people see each other as the enemy. And this is what I think is the most dangerous thing. Also, as a psychologist, I think it's very interesting how people's mentality can change completely. And even now, I can hear the way that people are talking about Russians, and that Facebook allows hate speech as long as it's against Russians. I think it's insane. I'm hearing people saying that, yeah, you should just kill all Russians, or people posting these kind of things. And that's no problem, because that's politically correct now, because now Russia is the enemy again. Usually there's more than one side to each story. And it's very much from one side that we're hearing this in Denmark and in the West. We have the Western version of the story, and then there's the Russian version of the story. And even if the Western version of the story was the absolute truth, what does that have to do with me? And what does that have to do with some people who are now not allowed to join the Special Olympics because of being Russian? This is insane. And it's the same kind of thing that was done to the Jews at that time. People are treated poorly for the greater good. And this is wrong. It's fascism. That's what that is. A Russian woman was supposed to have an opera concert in Denmark this year, and this had to be canceled because she's Russian. The Russian Orthodox Church in Copenhagen, people were throwing red paint on it and vandalizing, writing Z's equals Nazi symbol. And that's because the Z is what is used on Russian tanks. And I think this is the worst thing you could possibly say to a Russian after World War II. World War II is completely ingrained in Russian DNA and in Russian mentality, because everybody has lost some family member to that war. And I think it's similar also to the Jewish, that it's something that is a very personal subject. It's like calling Jews Nazis. It's not okay.
3 months ago, I wrote a letter to my child. I have two. And I wrote them that I'm very sorry. They are not going to live in the same atmosphere as I lived. And it's my duty to fight for them. To go till the end. I told them, I'm not going to stop. Masks are not mandate anymore. But you see young child in the street wearing this mask. It's awful. And when I see now, you know, the photos from China, what is going there now is, it's awful. I know that if we're not going to stop it, it's going to be here. Globalists there are so strong, have so money. We are the small people. What are we going to do? I think the last 2 years, it was something like an obedience test, okay? And they won. They won. The obedience here in Israel was extreme. 9 million people in Israel, 6 million took the first job. The second job, 3 million. The third one, about 1 million. So there is less obedience, but more violence. But I think here in Israel, because most of the policemen were in the army, 3 years of army, making you less human. They were with a mask over their face. They are trained to do things like that. They are taking actions to bring on the agenda 2030 and everything. And as I said, they're not stopping. You know, in Europe, there is going to be a digital passport in July. I was sure it will come here to Israel. So they're not stopping. And the one currency all over the world and one bank all over. Mm-hmm. Think if we are going to be together all over the world, you know, all the awakened people, and do something together, but we have to align with each other. This is my dream. It's really my dream right now that we all protest in the same day, they all over the world, and we will be masses in the streets. And now it's our turn to empower people, not to obey, right? And not to be afraid. We have the power. We the people. We have a sentence in Israel: "Nachnu lo nevater." We're not going to give up ever. Yeah.
Antigone Michaelides said, "Upper West Side Story. My son's middle school holiday show featured a song where the kids holding Pfizer and Moderna signs were singing, 'If you're not vaxxed, you're no friend of mine,' to the tune of Safety Dance. 1 in 5 kids at that school are unvaxxed." So, you know, we teach our kids not to bully. We hear so much about inclusion and, you know, making sure that, you know, everyone is treated the same in a society. And I saw that, and I was just so appalled that in a city that I thought was supposed to be progressive and inclusive, we are ostracizing children because their parents made a determination that they don't want to give them an experimental medicine because they think that there's a greater risk to reward ratio. And it seemed absurd to me. Most interestingly, I got a call from the New York Times. And I have to admit, I was a little excited to talk to the reporter from the New York Times. And she called me and I got into my family heritage and the background. And I reiterated, I'm not talking about the Holocaust. I'm not talking about 1943. I'm not talking about gas chambers. I'm telling you the way this started, and I know this from hearing the stories my whole life, was exclusion from basic public life. The health pass in Germany and subsequently throughout Europe banned Jews from bars and restaurants and museums and libraries, much like New York City in 2021. And similarly, doctors kind of went along with it, and doctors said that this was, you know, the press went along with it. They demonized Jews as being dirty. They had lice and thus typhoid and were a danger. And this is my family story. So a few minutes later, I see the New York Times wrote a piece that essentially called me an anti-Semite. And not explicitly in those terms, but that was certainly the tone. It did not mention my family heritage. It did not even mention I was Jewish. And from there, people got really angry and people started calling. Customers were calling. We have, you know, we do a lot of events in our space that I'm a danger to public health. By the way, I've been complying the whole time. That's the most frustrating part of the whole thing. Because I could have just not complied quietly, but I sort of got the worst ends of the deal. We complied the whole time, and yet I still pay the price. So customers were canceling. We have a big wholesale business that, you know, people were outraged. Of course, my team started reaching out to them, and they're like, wait, this guy's Jewish? Oh, it didn't say that. But again, we don't have the voice of the New York Times, and we lost control of the narrative. Look at any atrocity in human history. It starts with the othering of people. And yeah, and this is where we are now. My point was, human beings are entitled to determine what they put in their body. And I believe the Nuremberg Code guaranteed that. Informed consent. And we violated that. And we violated a whole bunch of international laws. So there is no justification for any of this. It's either comically stupid or straight up evil. And initially, I thought it was just incompetence. The signs are all there that this is not an accident. They're all going in a direction that is against the truth. And the systematic suppression of information, whether it be about early treatments or efficacy of drugs or deadliness of disease, they're all going the same way. And I don't know, I didn't start out as a raging conspiracy theorist, but at this point, the evidence is so damning and so obvious that there is quite obviously an agenda. And then it's just a question of what is that agenda and what can we do to preserve just humanity, not to speak in hyperbolic terms, but no one's coming to save us, and all we have is each other. It's a little bit of 1984, a little bit of Brave New World, a little bit of Fahrenheit 451 with like a Matrix wrapper. The ingredients, I understood. I just don't trust the pharmaceutical companies, obviously. You know, the governments lie to you, of course. But the recipe was just so hard to get your head around. But once you see it, you can't unsee it. And I don't want to go back there, which is why, I know this is a global thing. I don't think I can run from anywhere, but I also, that's not my goal. I personally just need to be around people who see it and are ideologically aligned and committed to fighting it. And sadly, it seems like this once great city has fallen. There's a, you know, there, I saw this bar curve on, or is a bell curve rather, on who had vaccine hesitancy. And like the most educated and the least educated.
Yeah.
And it's the middle. You know, when I told this to my aunt, who I mentioned earlier, my father's sister, she said, "You sound." She grew up, they grew up. Their kids grew up in Staten Island, and you know, they sound like they're from Staten Island. And she's like, "You sound like your cousin." He's been telling me Bill Gates wants to put a microchip in your head, and he sounds crazy. I said, "You know." It might not play out exactly that way, but it's, you know, the microchips are being tested in Sweden right now, and he's not totally wrong about this.
Wow, this is overwhelming. I mean, who wants to know about this? Who wants to understand that this is what's really going on, that there are people who wants to hurt us, that the government who we trust, that we think that they work for us, are actually working now against us. I can understand these people who prefer to shut their eyes and keep on living as if nothing happened. But on the other hand, you cannot do this anymore. Shutting your eyes is not an option anymore. People need to get to wake up, especially those who have kids, the next generation, which is totally lost. We always been wondering how did it happen in the Holocaust, that people went, they say like sheep, and they didn't resist, they didn't do anything, but now we get the answer. We can see how easy it is for those who knows what they're doing, how easy it is to control people's mind.
Thank you.
nicht kein und als die Geist im letzten Weg. Gott Himmel in Bleien wir, verstern bleue Weg. Weil kommen wird noch in sein Reusgebänk so. Es wird der Beut von unser Trott, wir senden du. Kommen wird noch in sein Reusgebänk so. Es wird der Beut von unser Trott, wir senden du. Grünen Palmenland bis weißen Land von Schnee. Wir kommen um mit unser Pein, mit unser Weh. Und wie es gefallen ist, der Spritz von unser Blied. Spotzen wir dort unser Gewehre, unser Miet. Und wie es gefallen ist, der Spritz von unser Blied. Spotzen wir dort unser Gewehre, unser Miet. Es wird die Morgen sind bei Gilden ins dem Heind. In der Nächten wird verschwinden mit dem Feind. Rot versammeln wird die Sehnende Ajo. Wie ein Baron versein das Lied von dort zu dort. Rot versammeln wird die Sehnende Ajo. Wie ein Baron versein das Lied von dort zu dort. Das Lied geschrieben ist mit Blut und nicht mit Blei. Sind nicht kein Liedl für ein Vogel läuft da frei. Du sollt der Volk zwischen Fall und die gewendet. Das Lied gesingen mit Naganes in die Hand. Du sollt der Volk zwischen Fall und die gewendet. Das Lied gesingen mit Naganes in die Hand. Da sucht nicht kein Wulas die Geist im letzten Weg. Gott Himmel in Bleine, Verstern bleue Weg. Weil kommen wird noch in sein Reus gebrengt. Es wird der Freund an unser Trott, wir senden wir. Kommen wird noch in sein Reus gebrengt. Es wird der Freund an unser Trott, wir senden wir.